Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carriad Lloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast. Hey Greasters, it's Carriad here. Hello. I'm still slightly recovering from the British Podcast Awards, which I hosted on Saturday, which was very, very fun, and it was so nice to just hang out with all the amazing podcasts out there. If you haven't already heard, the main winner of the night was an amazing podcast by George the Poet called Have You Heard George's Podcast, and I can't recommend it enough, really. And it kind of touches on themes of grief and loss and, yeah, deeper topics. So if you haven't listened to that yet, I thoroughly recommend it. As I've been saying for a while now, we have a live episode coming up on June the 6th at the Udderbelly Festival South Bank. I'm going to be joined by Jeff Lloyd from the Adrift podcast and Reasons to be Cheerful podcast, from Camille Yucan from Birthday Girls House Party, and Josie Long, who also hosts Shortcuts as well and is a brilliant stand-up comedian. Head to the Udderbelly Festival for tickets. We're going to be having some cheery chats about death, which I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy. This week, I'm joined by comedian, writer, actor, and broadcaster Samantha Baines. You may have heard Sam on the radio. She's a regular on Radio 4 and Radio 5 Live. You might have seen her stand-up shows or her brilliant feminist videos she does for Stylist magazine. And you might have also seen her in The Crown, our most regal guest yet, I think. And she's also currently the host of Magic Mike Live in London. So I think she probably has a very good job, actually. Yeah, I think that must be a really enjoyable job. She's a brilliant comedian and a wonderful human, and she came in to talk to me about her dad. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with comedian, actor and broadcaster Samantha Baines. Hello.
Hi.
Recovering from your new tattoo.
Yes. And my period started and today. So it's my womb is heavy.
It's such a joyous, like, say, celebration of womanhood today.
Isn't it?
Feeling.
Had to pop into a shop to buy some extra stuff.
Do you ever, when that happens to you, I still think, like, Jesus Christ, I'm in my 30s and I still can't have a tampon on me. Like, what?
I feel embarrassed. Well, I normally have them in every bag.
Same. I have them in every bag, but then I did a clear out.
Yeah.
Of the bags,
and
right?
When you change bags sometimes and you've used the spare one that you've had before.
Or have you done the thing where there was a spare one but it's been in your bag so long it's basically disintegrated.
Yeah.
And you think, is that...
Do I want to put that inside me?
I mean, it's a bit dusty. wouldn't kill me? Would do the job? Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it?
It's a fun time. I even have a tampon drawer at home.
Same.
In the bathroom.
Yeah. But gotta have a tampon drawer.
Still.
I mean, this is not the topic I expected hit straight away. I'm trying to think, how can we swerve back into...
And my dad loved periods. And tampons.
And who... What family doesn't celebrate that moment?
Exactly.
My dad was weird about it, actually. It was your dad.
I think my dad just never really mentioned it.
He didn't mention it, but he was definitely like, it was like, oh, he just was like annoying about it. I remember him being particularly annoying. like making a sort of joke, trying to be jokey, and me being like, do not joke with me about this. This is not okay. Like,
I think my dad just avoided the topic.
I think that's like, safer. Sometimes I think that's safer.
Yeah, I don't think he was like, you know, worried about talking about it for whatever reason, but I think he just didn't.
Fair, and fair play to him.
I think he will have bought, like, yeah, when we were younger, he must have bought my sister and I, like, period paraphernalia.
Yeah, and was cool with it.
At some point, yeah.
So, I mean, Sam, we've mentioned him already. Who are we remembering today?
My dad.
Your dad. So, how long ago did your dad die?
So, my dad died on, remember, the 5th of November.
Wow.
So useful, thanks, Dad. He died on the 5th of November, 2016.
And what did he die of? What happened?
Oh, it's quite a long story.
Well, that's
so
in the right
place. He had lots of complications. So basically, he smoked all his life. Mm. He loved cigarettes and alcohol. But he smoked cigarettes for a really long time. And then he decided that maybe it wasn't a good idea. So he got hypnotized to stop smoking cigarettes.
And it worked.
My mum got hypnotized. And it worked.
Oh,
and so instead, he smoked cigars. So he literally smoked like 20 cigars a day,
which
is worse than cigarettes.
Yeah.
But he couldn't then go back to cigarettes. And then he got a lung condition. So we obviously thought it was down to the cigarettes, but it's a lung condition that anyone can get. It's not actually related. I'm sure cigarettes don't help.
Yeah, yeah.
So the way we realise is it, like, looking back, it was going on for a few years. Like, he used to bring me to university and help me carry all my crap up like four flights of stairs to my uni home, and he'd get like really out of breath like on the way down, but you know, I just thought, my dad's getting old. And then when he was at work, it happened a couple of times. I remember he told me they went on a work trip and he got off at the tube and he had to walk up the tube steps, and he got to the top and he like couldn't get his breath back. And then so it's going on for a while before he went to the doctor, and the doctor basically said that he had a lung condition. I'm trying to remember what it's called. He had pulmonary fibrosis, but that's a heart thing. He basically had a lung condition where you know the cauliflower-shaped things in your lungs?
The bracchioli.
Oh, good biology knowledge.
GCSE biology, guys, is still in there.
The broccoli,
yeah.
They get sort of like scar tissue around them.
Oh, yeah.
And then they produce like mucus to protect them and try and heal the scar tissue, but that means it's harder to absorb oxygen.
Oh, right.
So, you know, getting your breath is really hard. So it got so bad that when I was on holiday, so I was in the Dominican Republic on a all-inclusive holiday, which I really didn't like because there were loads of people there like drinking all day and partying. And
yeah.
I was like, I just want to lie down in the quiet. Anyway, so I was on holiday and I FaceTimed my dad, and he was like in hospital with an oxygen mask on. And like, we knew something was wrong, but obviously like that's quite a scary thing to see. And then from that point on, he was on oxygen 24 hours a day.
Wow.
So they would give him like little oxygen canisters that he could like carry around with him if he went out.
Yeah.
And then like a tube that went up his nose. And then at home, he had these incredibly loud machines.
So like a nebulizer machine. Is that with the oxygen?
Yeah. So it takes in the air and it makes it pure oxygen.
And how long was he on that for? Like,
it was really quick that he sort of went on the oxygen and then just got worse and worse. And I think in some ways it was like him knowing that he was ill now. So he was on that for maybe less than a year, like 8 months to a year in his own home. And so he used to go out with them and just carry a little oxygen tank on his shoulder. But obviously he had to be careful because the oxygen only lasts for a certain amount of time.
Oh, God.
So when we went out, we'd have to like bring a spare one in the car or like time our trips.
Wow.
So he loved the cinema. We used to go to the cinema, but we'd have to like time how long he'd got on his oxygen and stuff. But then he got so bad with it that like walking a long distance got really difficult. So then he got a scooter, which he hated the idea of, but I tried to make it like really fun and like went on the scooter and like drove around and was like racing and stuff. And like, because my dad used to be a policeman, and when he was younger, and he was like the tough man.
Yeah.
And he hated like not being able to do things for him, and the fact that we had to help him, the fact that like he couldn't walk long distances like really affected him, and he didn't want to look. He was like always like, I don't want to look one of those old guys on a scooter. But so then we started going out with him on a scooter, but then it got so bad that basically they said that he needed to really stay at home.
Oh God.
On his oxygen.
Yeah.
So for...
And how old was he at this point?
59.
Yes, that's young, really.
Yeah.
And it's and you and your sister, there's not other siblings. So just,
no, me and my sister and my mum. Right, so okay. Him and my mum were separated,
right, okay.
But still got on really well.
Yeah.
And neither of them have other partners.
Okay.
Well, he didn't and my mum doesn't. So he was, you know, suffering with that, although he wasn't meant to drive, but he rigged up this like oxygen tank in his car, which is like highly illegal because oxygen is highly flammable.
Oh my God.
And he like rigged it up in the boot and then put the oxygen feed like through the roof, and it came out the steering wheel so he could use it and drive because he loved driving and just to get out and about.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yeah, he was really funny.
Did he have that sort of ex-policeman thing of like, oh, you know, if I get pulled over, I'll be
I'll probably know someone.
I'll somehow get my way out of this.
Yes, and then he got like a blue badge, which he loved when he was driving. Because then
that's
we
the
could
one great thing about
close.
Terminal illness. Yeah, I will say that blue badge. I know some people like the blue badges. I mean, everything's awful, but the blue badge is bloody great.
Yeah.
Like you can park anywhere.
Mm, so that was good. But yeah, so then it got bad and he couldn't leave the house, which he hated because he felt really stuck. And my sister was moved in and was living with him at the time. And then he sort of deteriorated really quickly and he needed to go into a home.
Were you living nearby at this point?
Not nearby, but not really far.
Right, like okay, yeah.
An hour.
Yeah,
on the train
yeah.
away.
All right, okay.
But also, I don't think he let us all in on how bad he was. And we
yeah.
kind of thought, you know, when something's happening, you just normalise it.
Mm.
And you don't think, oh, this is... When it first happened, I remember being really upset and, like, really worried. But then because, you know, life was carrying on
mm.
and we were kind of all dealing with it, we kind of almost not stopped worrying about it, but got used to it. So then he was told that he needed to go into a home, and he started becoming really worried that he was gonna like die, and then me and my sister were gonna come around and find his dead body, because he kept telling us the story of like when he was a policeman, like obviously he was exposed to a lot of dead bodies
mm.
and he was like, you never forget how it looks and the smell, and mm. you know, I don't want either of you to see me like that, especially if a dead body has been somewhere for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So he got really obsessed with like this idea, and because he couldn't breathe very well, he, you know, the way he would have died is either a heart attack or basically suffocating because of the lack of oxygen. So then, like, all of a sudden, this healthcare professional came around and was like, he needs to go into a home. And then we were, like, looking at homes, like, the next day.
Wow.
And obviously my dad couldn't go because he had to stay at home.
Yeah.
So, like, I found him his home and I had to, like, say yes or no.
Oh God.
And, like, that was the place he was going to be
and
for the rest
unusual.
Of his life.
Situation as well, because normally that happens when you are much older.
Yeah.
And you are, I guess you've had that process of like, oh, my parent is in their 80s and I'm there, and you know, I'm used to being the one that makes the decisions. But yeah, I guess it was that like the first time you having to make decisions for him kind of thing.
Yeah. And also like my mum has a 9-to-5 job and I think my sister was at uni at the time.
Mm.
So I'm freelance, so I could go to these places.
Yeah.
So I was like there on my own in this care home, like, I don't know if this is a good room.
Yeah.
I haven't been to loads of care homes.
God.
It was like, I felt like, you know, when you like find a home and you look on Rightmove.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was like, is there a Rightmove for care homes? Like, how can I compare it
but
to other things?
There should be, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
So, you know, but also there were only certain care homes he could go into because he couldn't climb stairs and things like that. So I found him this care home. The people seemed really nice. And the room they wanted to put him in only had a window. So I used my negotiation freelancer skills and I managed to get him a room with like sliding doors that opened out onto a bit of green,
nice.
Which I thought he'd like.
Yeah.
So I like upgraded him.
I see your offer. I'm just wondering, you know, what can we do about this? Like,
yeah. I don't know if you know, but I was in The Crown. My dad had a nicer room.
I nearly mentioned that. I was going to say, I just started watching it and now you popped up and I was like, oh. There she is. Yeah, yeah.
I only have one scene where I look nice, though, and then I'm dying.
You're dying.
So I was filming The Crown when my dad was ill.
And you're dying, if you haven't seen The Crown, and this is not a spoiler because it's the past, it's the episode where they have a pea souper, which is this horrible, horrible fog. So you are in the thing dying of like this like lung disease sort of thing, isn't it?
So I'm dying of like, smog, chemicals and soot on my lungs. So my role in the episode, which is episode 4, is like one scene I'm normal and then I progressively get, like I find it more difficult to breathe and I'm like coughing up soot. And then I get taken to the hospital and put on oxygen. So it's really weird to be doing that at the same time as like my dad had just gone into the home and like I was going to see him and
that's really weird. Did you have that sort of slightly, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's like, a great
at
job.
At the time, I was just like, great. Like, I know what coughing sounds like when you have a lung condition. Like, you know, when you just like put it to one side, it's not even an issue. And actually, my dad watched my episode of The Crown the day before he died and sent me a text message saying that he was really proud of me and that we cough the same. And like, that was the last thing he saw me in.
It's not bad. That's pretty good. That's pretty cool.
But it was so weird that it was like a coughing
thing. Yeah,
yeah. But anyway, so he moved into this home and I think they were great and the nurses were so lovely. But I think the problem is with that is like, you know, we wheeled him in and he was like, I'm going to die in this room. Mm. Like he said that to me. And like, what can you say?
Oh, God.
And because I think you become really like institutionalized in that situation. And he was surrounded by, you know, so at this stage, he was still 59 and he had his 60th birthday before he died. So he was 60 when he died. But he was surrounded by like 80, 90 year olds. Yeah, like no one was his age. It was so sad going into the home, every day or whenever I went to see him because there was just like really old people lying in beds, not saying anything or just watching TV and in these small rooms. And like the care home staff obviously were doing the best they could, but it was just a really sad place to be. And I think that's what's so hard.
It's a place where normally, like you said, 80 to 90 year old people, 80 is a bit harsh, 90 year old go, to live out their last days, but to have your last days when you're so much younger must have been really tricky. Like,
and like the guy in the room next door like died while he was there, and like to just be surrounded by death, like it's hard because what else are you gonna do? But I think because he got a lot worse and then in the home and he was in a wheelchair then and he couldn't really walk or stand. And at that time, I was organising my wedding.
So, to get my timeline, had you been organising the wedding before he'd got sick, or had this been at the same time kind of thing?
At the same time. So he was sick already when my husband proposed.
Yeah.
And then he was getting iller and iller whilst we were planning the wedding. So when he went into the home, and then he was in a wheelchair. We'd booked our wedding to be in Edinburgh. And then we started to realise it was going to be really hard to get him to Edinburgh because we'd need to like, we looked into it, we'd need to like hire an ambulance to take him up and then obviously have loads of oxygen on hand, maybe take his oxygen machines with us.
Oh my God,
And they were these like bulky, heavy machines and they'd make such a loud noise like converting the oxygen. So, there was all this logistics and stuff. And then I basically spoke to my husband about it.
Is he from Edinburgh? Is that was the...
No, but we met at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Oh,
and
I see.
He proposed in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And the day after he proposed on Arthur's Seat, we went to see an Edinburgh venue just to be like, should we just go see a wedding venue? And it was amazing. And we were like, we're going to get married here.
Aww.
So we just like booked it the next day.
Aww.
So, so we were planning all of that and it was looking like he wasn't going to be able to be there. And that was a really big issue for me because I wanted my dad to be at my wedding.
Yeah.
Also, my gran died and then my grandma died within 2 weeks of each other.
Oh, my God.
At this time when my dad was really ill.
Had they been ill or was it just they were just old? Was it?
So my grandma had been ill. She had dementia and she was in a home.
Right.
My gran wasn't ill, but then she was taken ill, went into hospital, got pneumonia.
And was that your dad's mum, the gran or the grandma?
My dad's mum was grandma with dementia.
Right, okay. Oh, God.
So
his mum dies as well. Like,
yeah,
oh.
So my mum's mum died and my dad had been really close to her and he didn't come to the funeral.
Right.
And it was at that point that me and my family kind of realised that it was really bad and he was putting a brave face on it because he would have been there
if
in any way he could. And then his mum died and he obviously had to organise her funeral and estate and everything from his care home.
Jesus.
And so it was that point that we were like, my dad's not going to be able to be at the wedding. I really need him to be there. And I spoke to my husband about it and he said something which I will forever love him for, which was that we could get married sooner near my dad and then still have the big wedding in Scotland party. And that was so amazing of him because that's his wedding day too. Mm. And it wasn't going to be what we'd planned for, but he knew how important it was to have my dad there.
Of course, yeah.
So then in 2 weeks, we got special dispensation to have our marriage license go through quicker because you have to give notice of like a few months.
The banners or bans or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, so if someone can complain about you, yeah, they don't want you to get married.
We got special dispensation to have that go through quickly because my dad was ill. And then I booked a registry office like as near to the home as we could find. And then I booked like a hotel that we could go to afterwards for dinner as near to his home as I could find. And then we like organised one of the carers from his care home to like bring him and bring oxygen. Aww. And so we had this like little wedding service where my dad gave me away. So he didn't walk me down the aisle because he was in a wheelchair, but he waited at the top of the aisle and then like took my hand and like handed it over. And it was just so amazing that I got to be married with him there.
Did you bawl your eyes out?
I didn't. It was a really happy day.
Oh, that's
like,
nice.
And he like made a speech.
And he made a speech.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And he even stood up for the beginning of it, but then he was like, I need to sit down.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it was really nice. And
God, how incredible, like the effort that must have been for him to do that must have been.
He was so pleased though. He was upset on the morning, I remember, because I was like getting ready in my wedding dress at my mum's. No, at my dad's old house.
Wow.
And he like rung me and he was like, I should be there, like pacing up and down, downstairs waiting for you to come down. And I was like, yeah, but I'm taking ages to do my makeup, so you probably wouldn't see me anyway until we leave. And he got to the registry office like early and like, you know, gave me a pep talk. It was nice. I mean, the only thing was, because obviously he was on oxygen all day and going to the toilet for him was really difficult. So because the strain of like, you know, obviously you've got to get up, get on the toilet seat, pull your trousers down. Like there's actually, I'd never thought about it before, but there's a lot of moving that comes into going to the loo.
Yeah.
And also he didn't want, you know, anyone to do it for him. He wanted to be able to keep going to the loo by himself for as long as he could. So he didn't like really drink or eat all day.
Oh.
So he didn't have to go.
Oh.
Also, we all went outside to do a like, so me and Matt, who's my husband, went off to have photos and then we all went outside to do a like throw the confetti. But my dad stayed inside because he was like, I'll get my wheelchair out of there. It'll be a faff. And when he stayed inside, he was on his own and his oxygen tank ran out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So he was like, I mean, he's used to like, he was used to having a little bit of oxygen. See, I still say he was, because I still think he's here half the time.
But also, I find it's really hard to change it when you're talking about, like, you know, the situation in the past. Do you know what I mean?
Like now.
Yeah, like now you can say, oh, he isn't. But like there, it's like, but I'm remembering when he was there.
Yeah,
so yeah.
It's weird. But yeah, so we had this lovely little wedding. But when he had to leave early.
Or did he just have to wait till someone come back in and be like, oh, by the way, guys, my oxygen is gone.
Yeah.
Oh, bless him. Oh, my God.
Yeah. But it was fine. And we, you know, we changed it. But he had to leave early, like before everyone else left because of the oxygen.
You
know, because he's only got a limited time frame. And that was really sad when he left because he cried a lot. And me and... But it was... It was almost like nice because for the first time, like Matt was my husband that day.
Yeah.
And also he was there with me and my mum and we were all crying like as a family and waving bye to him. And then he died in November and I had our wedding in January. So he was the second wedding, so he was dead before the second wedding. Oh. And that was hard because even though he'd already been there for the small wedding, like that morning, my uncle gave me away. And that morning when, you know, I put my wedding dress on, I was just like, I burst into tears in the bathroom with my mum. And my mum was like, don't mess up your makeup, because I just had a makeup artist do it. But I was like, Dad should be here. Like, I don't want to go out. But I did, and it was a lovely day. And I'm sure he was there in spirit.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard, especially to, in a funny way, having had it once and knowing how nice it was.
Yeah.
To do it again and be like, ugh, I've done this once and it was really lovely. Why? It'd be great if he was here, guys. Yeah, that must be.
And also
really
both
hard.
My grands went there because they died previously. But everyone mentioned my dad in the speeches and he was, you know, he was definitely remembered. But I still haven't told you how he died, have I?
Yeah.
So he had this lung condition, got worse and worse. And then he basically suffocated.
So, at the home?
In the home, yeah.
Right.
So he had been to the toilet, which was a lot of strain on him. And he was trying to get his breath back after all that exertion. And he couldn't. And he'd signed a do not resuscitate. So
did you know he'd signed that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He told us early on. It was nice because his favourite woman at the care home, she used to make him like, because he didn't like the, he liked the food at the care home at the beginning, but obviously he got bored of it because he was there for a while. So she used to go home and make him like stir fry dishes and stuff and bring the, like noodles and bring them in for him. So she was there with him. So she like told us about it and she was like, I was like, you know, hugging him in my arms and we went there because we were all on my hen do. The drama continues.
Oh my god. Previously so, on. So yeah, so you guys are on your hen do. Well, you're on your hen do. Your people are with you. Yeah.
Yeah, I was on my hen do in Bath. My sister was with me and my mum and like my aunties and my cousins and all my friends. And we had a butler in the bath. Because I definitely wanted some form of nudity.
Right.
Said that early on.
So literally, I was like, nothing. I don't want anyone nude. I don't want,
everyone
clothed.
Says that, but you only do it once. Like, I want to see some man buttocks. So we had a butler in the bath, and he was a really sweet, awkward man who had red hair, and he was very freckly, and he just seemed like mildly uncomfortable about the situation, so it was quite funny. So he'd just been there and been like feeding me chocolate, and like we'd done, you know, those silly things where I had to swap my top with it. Like, he wasn't wearing a top, but he was just wearing an apron, so I had to give him my top and he had to give me his apron. We'd done all those silly like hen do things, and my auntie had got like really overly excited that he was there. And so he had literally just left, like he'd put his clothes on and was going out the door, and my friend handed me my phone and was like, Sam, you've got loads of missed calls. And I was like, oh. So I listened to a voicemail and it was someone from the care home saying, can we speak to you urgently? So I was worried, but I thought, you know, my dad had been taken into hospital.
Yeah.
I never thought he'd be dead.
Wow. So it wasn't, you know, I guess
he was really ill, but
and
he wasn't on death's door.
Yeah. And I guess you've been in that process for so long. Like you said, it's very normal now. It's like, well, we've had weeks of this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's happening. Oh my God. So then what, so did you ring them or just
so think? I rung them and I couldn't get through because they were obviously trying to ring me at the same time.
God.
So then I got my sister and was like, the care home have called me, can you try and call, I'll listen to the voicemail, see what they're saying. And then she got through and she looked really shocked, and then she said, are you saying my dad is dead?
Oh God.
And apparently, and I was standing face to face with her in a corridor in this house we were staying in Bath. And apparently, I don't remember, but I said, are you joking? But I said it apparently in this way where everyone in the room knew that Dad was dead.
Yeah.
And then I shouted for my mum and my mum came out, and like tact just left me at that moment. Like in hindsight, I realised that I broke the news to my mum.
Yeah.
But at the time, I didn't think about it. I just went, Dad's dead.
No, of course, because you're
like,
in total shock.
Really immediate. Mm. But so Emily's my sister, carried on talking to the woman on the phone. And I just like sat down on the stairs, just like, what the fuck?
Mm.
And then my auntie came out and tried to hug me, and I just went, get off me. Because it was like I couldn't have anyone touch me because I hadn't processed what had happened yet.
Yeah, yeah. And also, that's real. If she's hugging you, it's happened.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's sad. You're like, and if you can freeze time, it hasn't, right? So it's like, don't touch me, because then I'm still in the moment where I'm looking at my sister and I don't know what's happening.
Mm.
I want to stay there. I don't want to move forward because that's where he's dead.
Yeah.
God.
And my poor sister, she's still on the phone to this woman, like, because it was do not resuscitate, like, he died and the paramedics came, but obviously they couldn't do anything because it was do not resuscitate.
Yeah.
So they were storing his body, and we had to organise for, like, the undertakers to take the body, like, as quickly as possible.
Oh, my God.
So, like, they needed us to do all these things,
yeah,
like, straight away, because we hadn't put any of that in place because, like, really none of us thought he was going to dies,
yeah,
you know, then. So, like, I think they were saying lots of things to my sister, but we were just all completely in shock. And then I always take charge in, like, difficult situations. So I just said, let's all go upstairs and sit down and hold hands. Like, that was, I don't know why, but that was the first thing that came into my head. So me and my sister and my mum, like, all went into a bedroom upstairs and just sat down in a circle and held hands. Because, like Practical Magic, the film or something. Like, because to me, that was
light
what we
feather,
needed to
stiff
do.
Light as a board. Light as a feather.
Yeah.
But I think that's very human. That's like, I need to be touching my family, because then it's real. Then we can start going, okay, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. You know, because these things don't happen to us a lot, you know, huge deaths like that, we live in a time of peace and everything, you don't know. So your body just goes, what you need to do is hold your mum and sister's hands. Something fucking huge has happened. And so someone in the back of your brain, like your primeval voice, is like, this is what you should do, go and do it. And then
sit
you just,
down and hold hands.
Yeah. And I think, why the fuck, like, what else? I think that's so human. I think if you've been, when sometimes people say, like, oh, and then we just, you know, got in a car and didn't talk about it, I'm like, that's not what your body needed you to do. Your body needed to be held and cry and cry and cry. Yeah.
But also, yeah, I did weirdly, like, take charge of the situation. And then, like, people made us, like, sugary tea, and our family came in. And my maid of honour has since told me that. So obviously everyone knew, and they were all my friends, and a lot of them had met my dad. So some of them were, like, crying. And then my maid of honour was like, right, what can we do? So they started taking
down. That's a tough maid
of
honour job,
I mean,
as well.
Like, problem solving.
I got your butler in the bath. I thought I'd have to buy some bananas and whipped cream. That was my job done.
Also, we were all dressed to go on a night out. We were about to leave to go to this, like, restaurant. So she, like, rang the restaurant, told them what had happened. The restaurant paid to put all of our dinner in a cab and send it to us because they didn't do delivery.
Oh, my God.
How nice. So anyway, they started taking down all the penis paraphernalia because they were like, she's not going to want to see penises. And then we came down, we came back downstairs, like, eyes red, we've been crying loads, and they'd all, like, got together and just made food, because they were like, what can we do, we'll just make them loads of food. So we had food that they'd made, and then the restaurant delivery arrived in the taxi, we just had all this food, and then just, like, sat in my dressing gown with my family and my friends and sort of drunk Prosecco and kind of talked about my dad a bit, but also just, like, other stuff.
What a weird situation, but also, like, when in your life would you be surrounded by everybody?
Yeah, like, actually,
so unusual.
It was amazing because I had everyone there that I loved and that I would want to be there.
Yeah.
Apart from my husband, but I did ring him and he drove down and arrived at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning and, like, slept with me overnight, and then we left in the morning. But yeah, we had to get back in. So that was day one of my hen do, and we meant to do loads of, like, activities the next day and bath and go to the spa, which I love, which we didn't get to go to. So because we had to leave in the morning to kind of sort stuff out. And also at the same time, I'd pre-recorded a cover show on Virgin Radio, and I talked about my dad loads in the show, and I'd played songs that he loved because it was a bit of a rocky vibe. So I played loads of songs that he loved. And so in the radio, like, actually at that time, we listened to me on Virgin Radio talking about my dad playing songs on the way home from Bath after he died. It was like so many weird,
so
serendipitous things.
That's really... Do you know what's so... I think really odd. I got goosebumps. You were like at a wake and a funeral. Do you know what I mean? Like immediately. Because like being around all those people you love, drinking and talking about, that's the wake. So you immediately had that. And then you're like listening to the songs, talking about something. That's like a funeral. Mm. Like you were immediately in ceremonies of rituals of remembering him. Like...
Yeah.
But that normally people are like at home or at the hospital and then they have to tell people and they're sort of by themselves going, no, I have to make phone calls and think of things. It's like it all came to you.
Yeah.
Like the party was like, we're here and this is it. Like you don't have to do anything.
I do feel like my dad, like if there is a way that you could control when you die, like my dad would have chosen to die then because he knew that we were all together and we'd just had a fun time and we were all drinking and you know, he'd like that I'd maybe doused my feelings a little bit with Prosecco.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were so many weird things.
That is so weird. So you're just in the car listening to you and his favourite songs.
Yeah. And me talk about, like, why did I talk about him so much in that show I did?
Yeah.
Like, there was no real reason for it. So, yeah.
God, that's must have been strangely comforting and awful at exactly the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, like, we lost signal for a minute and I got, like, really upset.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But, yeah, it was weird. So that's how he died.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
So then are you organising the funeral or...?
Yeah, so then we had to... He told us that he wanted to be cremated, so we knew that, and then we had to like go to all these meetings, like pick a coffin, which is remarkably like picking a kitchen, because they're like, what sort of wood do you like? Do you want paneling? You can pick the handles.
I know.
Also, me and my sister just found the whole thing actually quite funny because it was so weird and surreal, and my mum like didn't find it funny and was like, why are you guys just laughing the whole time making jokes? And I was like, I'm a comedian, making jokes is the way I deal with things.
And it is weird, so much of it, like you said, is so weird. And the way they the way some of them speak, that's what I found really odd, like especially after my mother-in-law died, like kind of, and you know, would the body, and are you going to be, and would the family, like, and some people, like the undertaker for her funeral was so fucking good that I was like, God, this is a skill that, you know, like he'd been, you could just tell, like the way he spoke to everyone was very calm and sympathetic without being patronising. But then others, you were like, you need to work on the patter because it is making me want to hate you, and also I'm giving my husband weird looks because we're both like, what is wrong with this person? Why are they talking like this? Is a sad thing that you're like, okay, so yeah,
it's like they don't want to say dead or something. You're,
I know,
like, you work at a funeral home, like,
yeah.
We know he's dead, like, yeah, it's sad, we're really sad, but he is dead, like, you can say it,
say the word. Yeah,
it's like they use weird euphemisms. Yeah, so we had to like pick a coffin, and there were like paper coffins, and I found that amusing. sort the funeral. And because he'd just turned 60, so that was quite young, like apparently when people are younger and they die, loads of people come. So there were so many people at the funeral.
Oh, yeah, I can vouch for that. The younger you are, the more people at that funeral. Because they're all alive.
Yeah.
Like, not everyone's dead. It's basically, yeah.
Yes, it was like actually full house, standing room only.
Wow.
And for some unknown reason, my sister and I decided to do the eulogy.
A lot of people do. I think that's, and especially a lot of performers I speak to say, I did the eulogy because it's the thing I know how to do. I know how to stand up in front of people. Like, that's not that, because for some people, that's the first time they've, you know, stand up in front of a crowd. But as a performer, you're like, yeah, that's not the scary bit.
Well, weirdly, I did find it scary.
Oh, did you? Because it was not comedy, it was more vulnerable.
Yeah. And yeah, like, because I was talking, I guess in stand up, I am talking about stuff that's personal, but like, I've got control of the situation.
Yeah.
And because it was so recent and like my emotions were not in control.
Yeah.
So me and my sister decided to share it, and she's not a performer. So we sort of, weirdly, you like hold it together until you're bit.
Mm.
And then, you know, we did half and half. So like the beginning of his life and the end of his life. And my sister had one bit where she just couldn't speak anymore. Mm. And the vicar sort of came up behind us and was like, it's okay, keep going. And I just wanted to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
I was like, you're going to make her cry?
And also, like,
you can't punch a vicar in the face.
But also, I find that strange when it's like, I know you're trying to help, but why don't you just let someone be sad? Like, just let her not speak.
Yeah, just give her a second.
Yeah,
give her 5 minutes.
He was
like straight in, like,
yeah, yeah.
Don't worry, it's going to be fine, it's creepy. I was like, back off. So she carried on, but then she turned to me and she was like, can you finish it? So I finished her bit and then did mine. Got loads of laughs, great gig. And then when we both sat down, I think we felt so relieved that we'd got through it that we just like bawled our eyes out.
Mm.
And I'll never forget, like, my sister made these sobbing noises, which just like ate through my being. Mm. And like, it was like she was howling like a dog, but not quite. It wasn't like that.
And that's that primeval thing of hearing an animal in pain. Like, everything about you, your primeval brain is like, it's not okay, I have to help them or not be near them, because like this, it means something's wrong.
Mm.
And I just, yeah, like, it's so awful, that sound, isn't it? It's just.
But also, like, I read somewhere, which I find actually really useful on the day of the funeral, even though it sounds kind of weird, is that the funeral is not for you as the family.
Mm.
It's for everyone else to celebrate them.
Mm.
And that kind of helped me hold it. I think I held it together. Like, obviously I did cry, but like, I didn't lose it on the day, because I was like, this isn't for us. Like, we'll have our own grieving and crying time, and we can go away and deal with that. This is for everyone who loved him to come together and celebrate him. So I felt sort of like, I've got to keep it together and like keep everything going. I think the worst bit is after the funeral, when you have to stand and then everyone comes and like in a big queue and tells you stories about your dad, and you're like, I know you want to, it's hard because they want to share it with you and it's for them.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is like the worst day of my life ever.
And here's some great
second
facts about
him.
Second
to the actual death day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, here are memories that will make you cry later.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a lovely thing. And looking back, like, I do remember some of the things they said, and it was great. But like, at the time, I was just like, leave me alone inside. And then we had to like, you know, obviously you go to we hired a pub and there was food and everyone was drinking, and then everyone wanted to tell me more stories about him. And I basically, like, I was like, I'd done the meet and greet after the funeral, and then I just sat in the corner with my friends and I was like, I just don't want to talk to anyone for a while, because
it's so draining.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's like hosting a party, but it's not your fucking birthday.
Mm.
And they're not coming to say, hey, I love you, here's a present. They're coming to say, oh, your dead father was great. So you're like, this is the shittest party. Like,
yeah.
And it's, my mum always says as well, like, the day after the funeral, like, how drained you can be from having to keep it together, having to support the emotional like tension that it causes. Yeah, it's of course you don't want to spend constant hours being like, oh, thank you, yeah, thank you, oh, he was, yeah, thank you. You just can't, can yeah. you? Just.
I mean, I don't even remember the after path of the funeral. And actually, like, because weirdly, after my dad died, I listened to your podcast, The Mac Twins.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who are friends of mine. And that was, and they've lost their dad, and it's a really good episode.
Nice.
But that was the first time I listened to something, and I was like, these people know what I'm going through.
Because
I felt, you can feel so lonely in grief.
I mean, I found that really shocking when I finally read something that said the part of your brain that is working when you're grieving is the same part that is lit up when you're depressed. And I was like, yeah, you feel completely isolated and alone. And obviously it's very different to depression because you've got a fucking, there's a huge reason as opposed to like, oh, chemically, I don't know why this is happening to me. But yeah, it literally makes you feel alone because someone you love very close has died. So that's, your body is telling you you're alone.
Yeah.
But you're not, obviously you still have friends, but you feel so isolated. I think it's so, I mean, that's why I do the podcast. It's so important to know other people feel that
yeah.
way. Because otherwise you think, God, I'm the only person in the world who fucking...
And also you're the only person who had the relationship you had with
yeah.
that person. So even like, you know, obviously my mum had spent way longer with my dad than I had. And she'd had a very different relationship with him. She'd known him when he was younger. And even my sister, you know, that is more similar, but she was the younger sister. And I was all, and she lived with him, you know, later in her life. I'd always been like daddy's girl. And, you know, everyone always said I looked like my dad. And so like we had such different relationships with him even. So I think his death has really brought us closer together because when we were younger, we didn't get on. I mean, I tried to push her off a bunk bed when she was born because she was stealing all the attention. Like, you can tell I went into being a performer. Like, I didn't. I tried to kill her on several occasions. So it didn't bode too well for our relationship. But we're definitely closer now because of this shared experience.
Yeah.
And actually, sometimes I feel like my sister's the only person I can talk to about it because she had the closest relationship to him that I, you know, similar to mine. But I remember going back to that Mac Twins episode, one of the Mac Twins said that the whole first year was a complete blur. And at the time I was in the first year and I was like, I don't know how it could be that. And now looking back, like, I really can't remember so many things. Like, I remember the funeral and I remember him dying. And I remember like a couple of other like horrible, sad moments.
Mm.
But like the day to day, like I just don't remember.
And I think that's the thing that's so hard when I speak to people in the first year and they'll say statements like, oh no, I'm this or it's this. And I think, you don't know. And you can't say that. And it's, I know bang on about this all the time, but it's the exact same as when you have a baby. Like the first year is just mental.
Yeah.
And people keep telling you things or they'll be like, oh, I don't remember that. But you're like, how can you not remember? This is the, what the fuck is happening to me? And you get through it and you're like, oh, I don't really remember what happened. And I think whenever you're in such emotional turmoil, but obviously when you're in it, you just don't know you're in it, do you? You just think, well, I'm fine. And as you were saying that, I was just trying to remember I don't remember how we got back from my dad's funeral. I was just like, things just disappear.
Yeah.
because I
don't remember that.
And again, I mean, that emotional drain, like it just, I think you're just exhausted. You're just, your brain's processing death, which is the biggest thing it's had to process. So it can't take in, what did I eat or do today? Like, that's just nothing. Because it's like, how is someone not here anymore?
And I find I remember really strange details. Like, I remember at his funeral, I just bought this black coat. And I'd shown him this black coat because my mum had been like, you don't need any more coats. And I'd been like, it's really nice though, isn't it? And he was like, yeah, I really like it. And then when it came to his funeral, it was the only, I didn't have any black coats.
Aww.
And I had to wear that coat. And then I remember being like, what scarf am I going to wear? Should I wear a black scarf? Like, that just, I was really panicking about a scarf. And I have this scarf that is like double-sided and one side is like red tartan and the other side is like black and white stripes, and I remember turning it so you could see the black and white stripes and being really particular that you shouldn't be able to see any of the red because it was a funeral and it should be black. Like, weird stuff like that I remember really specifically, but then other things,
blur.
Like, I couldn't tell you what happened.
I think as well, anything you can grab onto, and we talked about Emily Dean's episode as well, of like funeral outfits, I think maybe this is a female thing, become very important because it's like, it's something you can control.
Mm.
And the world is crashing around you, literally disappearing, you're like, I could make myself look okay when I don't feel okay.
Yeah, and that becomes... I was like, I literally need to look amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think
and
that's
my
really
dad
common.
Would love it if I looked like, but why? I don't know, because I was just going to cry, mess up everything anyway. But like I had red lipstick on, like I'd done my hair, like I bought a new dress that was black but had like a pattern in it. And I was like, my dad would really like this dress. Yeah. And like.
It's survival. It's also like survival. Yeah. It's like there's so much in that. And again, I think, again, it's that thing of the way women take care of themselves is so dismissed as frivolous when it's like. It's not frivolous. There's a whole other language going on in the way that we dress and look after ourselves, or, you know, anyone who identifies as a woman feels the need to use that. And that's your language of protection and communication. And looking okay on that day when you didn't feel it, yeah. That's like a way of surviving. And I also think that, like, I've definitely put on the old red lipstick for funerals because there's something about being like, I'm fucking alive. Like, I will not be, I'm not going to die. That you sort of, your body is trying to get you to be like, you have to keep breathing. You have to keep
and
breathing.
And also, like, I'm here and I want to make a statement that I'm here. So I want to look like, it's almost like I want people to go, oh, wow, Sam looks great. Because it's like, I'm here and I'm going to be present. And it's my dad's funeral and I'm going to own it.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm going to treat it like it's a big, amazing party. Like,
why? But also that's
or
like,
a wedding. Yeah, like,
why not? Like, I think it's that thing again of... Because we don't talk about death, and so no one knows quite what to do, and it's like it's a huge thing that's happened. So why not partly? And that doesn't just because you look nice doesn't mean you feel great. Do you know what I mean? Or like you're celebrating?
Oh, yeah. No,
you're like
it was holding me together.
Yeah, yeah. And I think
my
it's,
red lipstick and my dress.
Yeah, because it's like well, scarf. You know, I've got yeah, and also scarf. I think is so interesting. It's like that's something that wraps around you, protects you, and keeps you warm. Of course, right now, what more do you want than a scarf that you feel like reminds you of your dad? Like, it's just...
And it protects that vulnerable area of, like, your throat and your heart.
Yeah, yeah. And then that was wrapped around... That's the thing. I'm so obsessed with this idea that it's frivolous. Or, like, why would you care what you're wearing? And it's like, because I live in a world where that is judged and that communicates. That's how I communicate a lot of things. Mm. And that was doing something for me that day. That's why that...
But also, yeah, like, it was for me.
Yeah.
It was like, I want to look amazing. Like, I didn't care if no one thought I actually did. I felt like I looked amazing. It, like, yeah, it helped me on that day.
So you're coming up to the second anniversary.
Yes.
How are you feeling at the moment? Like, obviously, you've... The first anniversary, I do think, is one of the strangest, weirdest things ever. But as you approach the second one, do you feel like, okay, I got through that first year? Or is it still, are you piecing yourself back together?
What we as a family find really difficult is, like, what to do the anniversary. Mm. Because, like, should you do something? Because also, it's not just the anniversary. It's, like, his birthday and, like... You know, we used to go to his house for Christmas. So it's all of those things. It's like, should you do something for you that's going to make you feel better? Should you do something that he would have liked to do? So I think the first year we just went for like lunch at this pub that he really loved that we used to go to with him. And then for his birthday, I think we went on like a spa day into the cinema just to make us like almost like a distraction rather than... It's like you want to sort of celebrate them on that day. And also everyone feels different about it. Like I want to just talk about him on that day. But like my mum doesn't process stuff like that. So actually that day is so hard for her anyway that talking about it would make it harder.
Yeah, we talk about this a lot on the Twitter. And I often get people tweeting me being like, oh, it's the, like, what am I meant to do?
Yeah.
And I always retweet it. And I'm like, hey, guys. Hey, griefsters. What do you think? And the consistent answer is like, do what you feel. Like, even if you plan something 2 weeks before, you're like, yeah, we're definitely going to go to the cinema. We're definitely going to do that. And you all wake up on the day and you're like, I don't want to. Don't do it. I think you just have to go with exactly what you want to do on the day, exactly how you feel. And it changes. I think that's the thing. Is we used to always be together. That was a big thing. Like, we have to be together on the anniversary. And then obviously it gets harder to be together or things are happening. And now... I try and, like, Like, we've even got to the point where, like, we don't do stuff on the day, but it'll be like the weekend of it. I'll be like to my mum, should we maybe remember?
Like, it's someone's birthday.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, yeah, we can't do the Wednesday, but like, but yeah, because I think as time goes on, I try and treat it as let's just try and not even remember him, let's just try and be with each other and connect a bit in that way of like, you know, like, oh, yeah, like, I'll just go and do something nice with my mum. And then, like, halfway through the day, I'll be like, so, you know, it's dad's anniversary. Like, we'll kind of, like, bring it up. But it dominates less. And I think the anniversaries, although, don't get me wrong, they still really can be really, really hard. And that day for me is still a tough day. I think the early anniversaries are tricky. And I would always say just literally do what you feel. But I think the main thing I always think is just be with the people you want to be
with.
Yeah,
I think at the moment I couldn't handle it on my own.
No,
like,
no,
I need to be with other people. But weirdly, I find his birthday harder than...
Oh, really?
Because in our family, we've always made a big deal of birthdays.
Yeah.
So his birthday and also my birthday, because he would always make a big deal of my birthday and I'd always see him. So, like, weirdly, those I find more difficult. But, you know, I'm not even 2 years in yet, and I definitely don't feel like... I definitely don't feel like I'm through anything. Mm. I just feel like it's carrying on.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the first year was a complete, like, whirlwind of emotion. And I do feel like I'm starting to deal with some of the emotions. And, you know, I've been able to talk about it without crying, which my counsellor would be so proud of. But, yeah, I'm still seeing a counsellor, like, about my grief. And also I have anxiety.
Mm.
And around the time, you know, after my dad's death, I did get really sad and went to the doctor. And I am on medication for depression and anxiety.
Oh, wow. Did you have anxiety beforehand?
Yeah, I've always had clinical anxiety.
See, I have to say, my experience, and I'm not a doctor, I think grief makes anxiety so much worse.
Yeah,
so
and also
much
the
worse.
Line between anxiety and depression is very, you know, thin. So it's very easy to move from one into the other.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it's that... you know, the thoughts going round in a circle, never finding any end.
Oh, God, yeah.
And with grief, obviously, that makes it... Like me fixating on the way that he died.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he didn't want to die like that. Like, that was so hard for me for so long.
Mm.
And, you know, you just fixate on, like, random things.
That's the one thing I also find interesting, that as you move away from it, and this is the bullshit, it's not that time heals. You process things. It doesn't fix it, but I do think when you're in the early stages, how they died and the medicalization is really present. So when I for the beginning could only remember him as sick, like, I'd try and remember healthy man, and I was like, I can't see it, and I could only remember, I can still see it, it was an outfit he wore, it's like jumper and tracksuit that like, even now thinking about it, he wore like a lot when he was sick, and I could only see that. And again, the obsessive thoughts, you know, I could just be like, I want to see something else. No, no, my brain would be like, hello, here's a photo. This one. And I just found it's very, very slowly. And I think it's shock, because something so shocking has happened. And, you know, when he was ill, like you said, even though it happened over, you know, a period of time, you're still processing that almost. Your brain's still going, okay, he was ill. And that's what, you know, you're still going through things that happened before they died. But slowly as I got through, and I'm not saying like, I hate this is just my process, I think, like, maybe 3 or 4 years in, I moved away from the sickness and I started remembering healthier things. And that was, I found that really, like, just like I'd open a window, like, oh yeah, just to somehow have processed the bit that they were ill. Because you just have to keep, unfortunately, I think your brain is trying to figure out what happened, so it just keeps going, yeah, but look at this, look at this, look at this. You know, they were sick. And you're like, I know they were sick. Stop telling me.
Well, yeah, it's literally only been in, like, the last month and a half that I've started remembering him when he was healthy.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, he was on the oxygen. He got very frail. He was in a wheelchair, so he wasn't using his muscles anymore. So he really became very different looking to the way he once was, and very fragile looking. And yeah, for so long I could only remember him like that, and it's horrible. And weirdly now, if I picture him, I remember him well. And I found this photo, which I've put on my phone, of him well, like, a few years before.
That's a good idea,
But still now, you know, every time I open my phone and see that photo, I get a little punch in my heart. But yeah, seeing him well is such a nice thing. What stayed with me, weirdly, are the noises. So also I got a hearing aid like last July, so 6 months or so after he died. And I didn't know I had hearing loss. Well, it happened. So I've got a hearing aid in one ear. And so weirdly, in the last sort of year, sounds become an important part of my life.
Yeah.
And I seem to have, like, especially with the oxygen machines, like the sound of the oxygen going round, I can still hear. And also he used to, because it was really difficult for him to, like, it felt like his lungs were blocked all the time. So he used to, like, not cough, but kind of clear his throat.
Yeah.
And weirdly, when I was on the train on the way here, there was a man who kept doing that exact, like, the whole time. And it just really reminded me of my dad. So it's like, yeah, sounds have stayed with me.
That's really interesting. I wonder if there is something to do with your hearing or something
like
that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because I'm thinking more about sound.
Yeah.
But it's so nice to remember him well looking.
Yeah.
Now, because for so long it made me so sad to...
I think that photo is a really nice idea because you do get... Because that's what the trauma was. Like, they were sick and they were ill. And then, like you said, your life becomes hospitals and oxygen machines and what medication, when do we need to, like, and it very quickly takes over a whole world that wasn't there before. So I definitely found it helpful to just, and it happened, yeah, it just sort of happened over time. I was like, oh yeah, he used to do that, didn't he? But that was before he was ill. And my dad was ill for like 2 months, you know, it was hardly any time, but it just was like seared into your brain. And it's stuff I've read on like PTSD again. That's like, that's what happens. You can only remember the trauma because your brain is still going, what the fuck just happened? So it's a nice place to get to.
I actually like made a conscious effort to surround myself with photos of him from when he was well. So I've got, like, on my dressing table, I've got like photos of him holding me when I was a baby. Aww. And like photos of him with me as a toddler, as well as more recent, because that image of him ill, like, I couldn't stop thinking about it and I hated it.
Yeah.
So I like really made a conscious effort to like try and remember other things.
Yeah.
And actually it really helped me get that image out of my head, but also start remembering like fun things.
Yeah.
Because initially you only remember horrible things. Or like the last thing he said to me, weirdly, was I went to see him on a day that I wasn't going to be able to see him. So I wasn't going to be able to see him before my hen do, and I wouldn't have seen him for a week. But then I think I had an audition or something and it was cancelled. So I did go and see him, and otherwise I wouldn't have seen him. And we spent like the whole day together, and I like helped him do some stuff on his new iPad. And he was having really bad muscle pain, which now I'm like, I wonder if it's his organs like shutting down a bit. But so I'd like organised his pillows in this like weird way where he was like sitting weirdly, but it made him feel comfortable. And we just spent the day like chatting and watching TV and doing stuff on his iPad. And then he got really upset. Like the last few times I went to see him, every time I left, he got upset. And I remember that time, oh, I might cry now. I remember that time he did get upset. And I was upset, but I thought, no, I don't want him to feel up, you know, I want to make it feel fun and nice. So sometimes when he was upset before, I'd go back then again and hug him and say bye and sort of have a little cry with him. But this time he was upset, I was like, love you, Dad, see you soon, like all chirpy, and hugged him. And then I walked away and he shouted, I love you, Sam. And that was the last thing he said to me, which is an amazing last thing to say. I thought I'd get through the whole thing without crying. So what is lovely is I'm really happy that I was chirpy at the end. I'm really happy I did that. And I'm really happy that that's the last thing he said to me. Yeah. So at least I can't fixate on doing something wrong there. There's plenty of other things I've said wrong in the past, but
I think that's amazing. I think that's amazing. That's really lovely. Because it's, you don't know, like, you don't know when your time is or, you know, all of the stuff. You don't know when your last words are to be with somebody. And to have that with your dad, I think, is, and that he was also so ill, but still able to communicate with you, like, that's, and it sounds like I always think it's like picking pearls out of shit. It's like you have to find those little tiny moments and be like, that was a really good moment, because they're surrounded by so much pain. Mm. And it's as worth celebrating as much as the pain. Like, they don't take away from each other. They don't diminish each other. They're just both there. That he shouted, "I love you, Sam." And that was, you know, didn't... You left both thinking, yeah, I know that. And I know he loves me, and he knows I love him. Like, that's... If you can have something in all the pain, it's to hold on to, I think, is like a bit magic, isn't it? Mm. Oh, my God. What was his name? I didn't ask.
Christopher.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for coming to talk to me.
That's all right.
About lovely Chris Baines. Was it Chris Baines?
Yeah, Chris Baines.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You can follow Sam on Twitter at Samantha Baines, and you can also listen to her podcast, Periods, Amazing Women in History, which you can download from all the usual podcast places. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, and you can email thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble, and the show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone.